It has been said that anyone who loves the law or sausages should never watch either one being made. Are you watching? We'll talk about that next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm your host here on Principles and Policies. And this is our program for Saturday, November 16th, 2024. I'm recording it on Friday, November 15th, 2024. And what am I speaking about? Well, folks, if you're paying any attention to what's going on in the news, you may have noticed that, for instance, these are some of the many things. It took almost 2 weeks for states like Arizona to certify all their elections. And I'll be quite honest. In modern day, that's absurd. It's ridiculous. And I believe that several election officials who were causing some of the trouble. Now, one thing I'll tell you about Arizona, some of the western states, we here in Ohio, you know, we have 88 counties and they're, everything's fairly close. You can drive corner to corner in most counties in 20 minutes or half an hour. I mean, we're not big entities. In Arizona, for instance, Arizona is a huge state, and I think it has 15 counties. And they're huge because Arizona is huge. You know, all you got to do is look on a map and compare the size of Ohio to Arizona. Arizona is just under 114,000 square miles, and Ohio is just under 45,000 square miles. So Arizona is roughly three times the size of Ohio. And with only 15 counties, what does that mean? It means the counties are big. And what does that mean? Well, it would be a little harder as a county election official to keep track, to keep decent track of, you know, exactly what's going on in all corners of the county and all the polling places and that kind of thing. And remember that Arizona has several different kinds of population there. And by that, I mean there are a lot of Indian reservations in Arizona. And yes, they have a certain amount of autonomy in that kind of thing. So, you know, it's not that easy to govern. So you give them some slack. But in the old days, Arizona used to, at least according to people I've spoken with, Arizona used to be able to get their results in the same way we did. The night of the national election, the results were counted and everything was in. Nowadays, you have to wait and we have to count this. We have to do this and that. We have to jump through these hoops. And part of it is you slow the process down, which gives people time. I hate to sound paranoid about this, but to give people time to see how many votes they have to steal, how many phony votes they have to put into the pot to make certain things happen. I'm absolutely convinced that that has happened to Carrie Lake in Arizona twice, that she has been robbed of being elected to the United States Senate twice in Arizona. And it's mostly through Maricopa County. Maricopa County is about 60% of the population of the state. And it's Phoenix, Arizona, basically. Phoenix and environs, suburbs and all that stuff. About 60% or maybe a little more live in areas surrounding Phoenix and Maricopa County. And again, it's a big county. But it has, the state has some seriously corrupt election officials. In fact, when Carrie Lake lost the first time, who did she lose to? She lost to the woman who is currently... I misspoke. I thought I had misspoke. Carrie Lake lost the race for governor to the woman who was the Secretary of State and refused to recuse herself when election irregularities came up in 2022. Carrie Lake was, frankly, I think, cheated. And then she was cheated in the senatorial race in 2024. That's my opinion. You can feel free to disagree. That's fine with me. But that being said, Are there other states where shenanigans go on? Oh, gosh, folks. If you weren't paying attention in 20, all kinds of states had major problems. Pennsylvania, obvious, Georgia, Michigan. States like, for instance, California, Washington, Oregon, they didn't need to cheat. They're left-wing enclaves. But places where a certain number of votes were needed to get rid of a presidential candidate, and the one everybody wanted to get rid of, all the left and the, unfortunately, some corrupt Republicans wanted to get rid of, was Donald Trump. And so did cheating occur? Look, evidence keeps popping up. People looking at ballots and seeing that they're simply photocopied. Mail-in ballots that are photocopied, and the only candidates on them are Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for vice president. And this is in 20. We didn't have that problem this time because a lot of states tightened up their requirements for vote by mail and drop-off boxes and all kinds of things. But we all heard instances, people who were in the know about how the early voting was going, and people would go by and burn remote ballot drop-off boxes. That happened in all kinds of places. So there were all kinds of attempts to cheat this time, too. It just didn't come off as well because, well, there was due diligence done, and secretaries of state in some states. There is a phony baloney thing going on right now in Pennsylvania. The sitting senator, United States senator from Pennsylvania, is Bob Casey, and it appears that Bob Casey was defeated. He was defeated by a margin wide enough that it should be insurmountable. However, there are attempts right now. Suddenly everybody wants to bring in more ballots, and what that means is the same thing it meant in 1960 when John F. Kennedy was running against Richard Nixon for president. And the vote that had not been counted yet, oddly enough, was Illinois. Illinois was well known. Of course, it is a liberal state. It remains a liberal state, even though I'd say that most of the state is fairly conservative. But what isn't conservative is Chicago. And Chicago dominates. They have managed to get into the legislature and dominate the way that votes are counted and those kinds of things. And what that means is it's grifter city. Now, again, Chicago virtually always goes for the Democrat, whether they're running for Senate, whether they're running for the president and vice president, that they go liberal. However, very often, because of the way that Illinois runs their system, Chicago dominates the election. There's just no way around that. Chicago is very dominant. And so in 1960, when Nixon and Kennedy were neck and neck, basically Illinois would decide the Electoral College. The report is, and again, these are reports. These are not known historical fact. However, people have testified to it. That basically election officials in Illinois said, how many votes do you need to bring in Kennedy over the top? And they were told that they needed X number of votes. And guess what? Those showed up in Chicago. Chicago supplied enough votes out of the blue to elect John Kennedy president of the United States by taking the state of Illinois. This is nothing new except on a more local level. Lyndon Johnson, who many of you, if you're old enough, remember, he was president of the United States. He was John F. Kennedy's vice president, who took the office after John Kennedy was assassinated. And his first election, and I think it was to the House of Representatives. I wouldn't swear. It's been a long time since I read this book. There's a great book by a guy named Robert Caro, and it's Path to Power. There's a 3-book series on how Lyndon Johnson came to be the politician that he was, the corrupt, deeply corrupted politician that he was. Essentially, Lyndon Johnson earned the name Landslide Lyndon, And yes, it was sarcastic. Landslide Linden won his first race for state office by having everyone in one town vote in alphabetical order for him, and his opponent didn't get a single vote. So in other words, all these people who didn't really vote in Texas voted in alphabetical order, and they voted for Lyndon Johnson. And it gave him enough votes to win the race. So again, this is nothing new, and this is why I brought up anyone who loves the law or sausages should never watch either one being made. And that's a quote from Otto von Bismarck, who was a leader in unifying Germany into a single entity, Germany, before 1871, I think. They were a group of countries that operated sort of in a confederacy, the North German Union, that kind of thing, and which means that people who wanted to consolidate power wanted them to become a single nation, and Otto von Bismarck did that. So Otto von Bismarck knew of which he spoke. Otto von Bismarck was, again, one of those guys who created the Germany that we knew in World War I with Kaiser Wilhelm. Kaiser Wilhelm was the third Kaiser, or Emperor, of Germany. His father had been Emperor before him, but only for just under 100 days, because by the time Wilhelm I, Wilhelm II's grandfather, died, Emperor Frederick, Kaiser Frederick, had cancer. And this is the father of Wilhelm II. He had cancer, and he only lasted in office about 99 days, speaking off the top of my head. But it was a very, very short reign. And then Wilhelm came in and was Kaiser until he was forced to abdicate at the end of World War I. And Germany went on to do the things that it did later in World War II, but minus its royalty. It had become a republic. But that being said, so we have a situation going on in Pennsylvania where new ballots are attempting to be brought in. And the question is, can they find enough of them to overcome? I think the margin in Pennsylvania is 40 or 80,000 votes, something like that. Actually, I just looked it up, and the margin is 25,000 votes. Okay, will this trigger an automatic recount? Yes, in an election this close, there will be a recount. Now, the question is, will it be a fair recount? Pennsylvania is not exactly known as the place where you would go to necessarily be the example for fair elections. And like we pointed out in 2020, things were done absolutely illegally. Votes are supposed to be counted in public. In other words, you could go down and watch votes being counted. What they did in Pennsylvania in certain precincts, not all over the state, but in key precincts, in Philadelphia, in Pittsburgh, in other places, I think in Harrisburg, places that are generally Democratic-controlled centers, covers were put over windows while new ballots were brought in to be counted. So, again, this is one of those problems that we ran into. Same thing happened in Michigan. Ballots were not counted publicly, and they're supposed to be. That's in 2020. So, thinking for sure that there's going to be a fair recount, I frankly don't think so. This is if you have been paying attention, you will notice that, for instance, when new senators were brought in for a seminar in Washington, D.C., run by the leadership in the Senate, the U.S. Senate, Chuck Schumer did not invite the senator-elect, and by the way, the race had been called as having fallen to McCormick. McCormick is the winner versus Bob Casey, at least so far until the recount. He was not invited to attend this because Chuck Schumer said, I don't want to prejudice anything going on in counting the votes in Pennsylvania. Well, that's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. The race had already been called. The Secretary of State in Pennsylvania had already declared McCormick the winner. Chuck Schumer basically was trying to keep the door open for a stolen election. There's no doubt about that. These guys know how to play the game. They've been doing it for decades. Unfortunately, this is one of the reasons that good Christians don't like to get involved in politics, because there's so much power-mongering dishonesty. But you know what, folks? There's power-mongering dishonesty because so many Christians don't want to be involved. If some of this stuff makes your head hurt, welcome to the club. My head hurt all the time. I have voted for... I always laugh about this. Somebody asked me about my voting record. I'm a registered Republican, but that doesn't mean I always vote for that party. I don't. I've voted for several Democrats. I've voted for lots of third-party candidates. That's simply, I was chairman of the Ohio Constitution Party in the early part of the 2000s for 2 years. In fact, I was thrown out of the National Constitution Party because I tried to maintain integrity. And it wasn't just me, it was several other men. In fact, my old partner, Barry Sheets, who used to broadcast with me. Barry and I both got thrown out of the Constitution Party, along with several other colleagues, because we attempted to maintain the integrity of the party. I know how some of this works, and I only saw it on a small scale because, let's face it, third-party politics is not a gigantic thing. I think I talked about it last week that people came over from the Republican Party to the Constitution Party so they could become a big fish in a small pond, and they were used to being small fish in a big pond in the Republican Party. Okay, well, that being said, Chuck Schumer knew exactly what he was doing, and what he was doing was keeping the door open to steal the election in Pennsylvania. And so keep an eye on that race. Now, as most of you who will be hearing this are from Ohio, what can you do to keep this race honest? Nothing. There is nothing you can do. This is totally in the hands of people in Pennsylvania. And that's the way it ought to be. Even if you know there's corruption. Now, there has been corruption in the past. Lots of corruption. Not necessarily in vote stealing, but corrupt members of Congress. There is a provision in the United States Constitution that you should know about. Article 1, Section 5 of the Constitution says, and I'll quote here, "Each house shall be the judge of elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members." So, in other words, the House and the Senate can be the final arbiter in election of its members. "And a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business. But a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each house may provide." Okay, so... we've now heard that the both houses are the judge of elections, returns, and qualifications of its members. So, in other words, there are constitutional requirements for membership to be elected to the Senate. And since we're talking about the Senate, we will go directly into what is required for a senator. "No person shall be a senator who shall not have attained to the age of 30 years and been 9 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state for which he will be chosen." So, in other words, you got to be 30 years old. You got to be a citizen for 9 years. That's an odd number. I had to have to go back into the debates and find out why they picked 9 years. But 9 years a citizen, and You have to be an inhabitant of the state that you are selected from. And that's an interesting thing. I'm pretty sure, for instance, when Bobby Kennedy was elected senator from New York, that he was not, he had to move there and establish residency, because when he announced, I think he was a resident of Massachusetts. I wouldn't swear to that. Remember, this is going way back in the Wayback Machine. But Hillary Clinton ran for senator from New York. And what did she have to do? She wasn't really qualified. She had to go buy a house and get herself qualified to run as a resident of New York. And if you recall, she bought a house on Long Island. And was she ever there? Not rarely, very rarely. She was, and yet the people of New York elected her. Now again, New York is an odd state because New York City runs the politics for the rest of the state. New York City and Albany run the rest of the state. The rest of the state very often is very conservative people, who are essentially under the thumb of New York City and Albany. Albany's the capital. All right, let's go back to this because I didn't get to the point I wanted to go to. Each house may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and with the concurrence of two-thirds, expel a member. Expel a member. with two-thirds, that's 67%, essentially. Expel a member. Has this ever happened? Oh, you bet. Yes, it has. If you look, you can find this information. It's easy to find. There are elected representatives who were expelled from Congress, as we talked about. And it goes back, the furthest one back is 1861. And there were three of those, and they were expelled for supporting the Confederate rebellion. It wasn't a rebellion. It was a Declaration of Independence. But that being said, they were from all three were either from Missouri or Kentucky. In 1980, Michael Myers was convicted in the Abscam scandal. If you remember anything about that, it was bribery scandal. James Traficant, one of our Ohio boys, James Traficant was expelled in 2002, and George Santos was expelled just in 2023. He committed fraud, and so he was expelled. Okay, now, there are other punishments that you could receive, censure, a reprimand. And there are lots and lots and lots of these. Most recently, Adam Schiff, Rashida Tlaib, Jamal Bowman, all basically, Rashida Tlaib was, reprimanded for comments related to the Israel-Hamas war. Jamal Bowman was the guy who pulled the fire alarm, in one of the Capitol office buildings to stop a vote from taking place on the floor of the House. And so he was reprimanded, and he also lost his job. He was beaten in a primary. So Adam Schiff was reprimanded or censured. He was censured for... making allegations regarding Russian collusion in the 2016 U.S. presidential election and the first impeachment of Donald Trump. So he tried to... Now, just in case you didn't know it, Adam Schiff from the Soviet Socialist Republic of California just became senator from California. So here's a guy who's clearly corrupt, but the people in California like him, so he got elected to the Senate. There are others, Charles Rangel, Paul Gosar in recent memory, Charles Diggs in the 70s, Daniel Flood, Again, these are payroll fraud, mail fraud, bribery, all those kinds of they were censured. Now, should they, if you take a bribe, should you just be censured? Censure is an official black mark on your record. A reprimand is simply a don't ever do that again, a knuckle wrap. Censure is a little more serious. Now, the last part that's the most important part that I was getting at is excluded representatives elect. There have representatives elect being excluded from the body, and the answer is yes, they have. The first one, now this is interesting, especially since with the changing views on marriage in the United States of America, it's still illegal here. Brigham Henry Roberts, a Democrat from Utah, was denied his seat for the practice of polygamy. Victor L. Berger, a socialist, this is that was in 1899, by the way, that Roberts was excluded. In 1919, Victor L. Berger, a socialist from Wisconsin, and that happened more than once, denied seat on the basis of opposition to World War I and conviction under the Espionage Act. The Supreme Court later overturned the conviction. Yeah, this was not a good thing. Victor L. Berger, again, was not allowed to take his seat in 1920. So in 1919 and 20, he goes back after being denied a seat the first time. Wisconsin's 5th Congressional District reelected Berger in a special election, though Congress again refused to seat him, leaving the seat open until 1921. Now, here's one that I'm aware of. I would have been about 10, but I had political awareness. I remember this being discussed. Adam Clayton Powell Jr., and Wikipedia is going to put this in a sort of a, they're going to put it in a very sympathetic light. He was a Democrat from New York, mismanaging his committee's budget in previous Congress, excessive absenteeism, misuse of public funds. Powell was reelected to the seat for one more term. The exclusion led to a Supreme Court case which held that the exclusion was unconstitutional. Well, of course it's constitutional. And that Congress can only exclude members who do not meet minimum constitutional qualifications for membership. That's hooey. Whoever the Supreme Court at the time was the Warren Court. The Warren Court apparently had no one who could actually read the Constitution. I can tell you that. And again, we're back to anyone who loves the law or sausages should never watch either one being made, because this was a terrible miscarriage of justice. Yes, Adam Clayton Powell was corrupt beyond what it says here. And eventually, I think he ended up moving to a Caribbean island or something, and I'm not absolutely certain, but he took bribes, he did all kinds of things. He was just not a good guy, but he was excluded, and the Supreme Court said you have to take him back. I'm not sure they ever did, and they can exclude for any reason, including corruption. So would the Brigham Henry Roberts denied his seat for the practice of polygamy? Would he that happen now? I don't know, and I doubt it. If you want to know the truth, I doubt that anybody would care that Brigham Henry Roberts, sadly, the way the institution of marriage has been denigrated and downgraded and made into a something it's not. But in any case, so yeah, there's plenty of corruption to go around. So this should surprise no one that somebody's fooling around trying to steal elections. And from a Christian perspective, you got to think about it in terms of why is it so important for one party or another to, why do some groups think that the end justifies the means to the point that it's so important that one party or another maintain power that it's okay to steal votes? It's okay to talk about democracy out of one side of your mouth while you are stuffing ballot boxes with your hand. I'm not necessarily just blaming one party. I'm blaming both parties. There are shenanigans. Now, I'll be quite honest. Most of the shenanigans you find out about, most of the corrupt machines are Democratic, although that has not always been the case historically. The Republicans were very good at stealing elections in the period before the advent of the 20th century. They were a very radical party. In fact, this is not really where I wanted to go, but the Republicans and Democrats switched places in the election of 1912, sort of. But the Republican Party became very conservative after that election, and the Democratic Party became very liberal after that election. Well, what happened in that election? That election was one to sit home for, really. This is one you may not have wanted to vote in. Remember that the four candidates in that election were Woodrow Wilson, Eugene V. Debs, who was the socialist candidate for president, again, William Howard Taft, who was the Republican nominee, and Teddy Roosevelt, who was the Bull Moose Party. What was the Bull Moose Party? It was an upstart party. He had been unhappy. Taft had been president for 4 years. Roosevelt was unhappy with Taft's policies. He said he wasn't progressive enough. And he and Taft then went into battle talking about which one was actually the most progressive. Now, progressive in the positive sense, progressive in the sense of being socialist. So they were fighting over basically who would be the better candidate to actually pretend that they were Eugene V. Debs, who was a socialist and was very open about it, and apparently was a very nice man, a fine man. After World War I broke out, things were done to him that were, you know, a lot of socialists were jailed as and called insurrectionists and revolutionaries and that kind of thing, because they were calling for people not to go to war. They were very much against World War I. They saw it as a capitalistic attempt to uphold monarchy and do all these kinds of things. Well, of course, World War I destroyed monarchies all over. But Debs and these guys had no way of knowing that. So Eugene V. Debs was actually thrown into jail, I think in 1917 or 18, and was let out not until the 20s, but he ran for president in 1920 from prison and as a martyr. And he was eventually let out, and I think he ran a couple more times. But that being said, here we've got people fighting with a socialist, Eugene V. Debs, to say who was the more socialist and who was the conservative in that candidate in that race. The conservative candidate in that race was Woodrow Wilson, who was running as a Cleveland Democrat. The Cleveland Democrats were pro-business, anti-tax. They were very much pro-small business, entrepreneurship, and the progressives were the absolute actual opposite. I mean, Theodore Roosevelt bragged about breaking up businesses. And Theodore Roosevelt essentially confiscated properties, privately owned property, to be pulled into national park. You know, he would sign bills taking all a private property and converting it to federal use in the form of a park. Now, you all, a lot of you have been to national parks and you like them and you think they're wonderful. There were other ways to do that. And there's no reason. I've always thought that the national parks should be turned back to the states because it basically, you could say the Constitution requires that, let's read it. The one place where the Constitution talks about federal ownership of lands is in Article 1, Section, I think, this is a long section, Section 8. Article 1, Section 8. Now, there are some things in here that you'll recognize what went on, but your other things, you'll have to think about it because it says that the federal government basically is to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square. What would that be? What's a 10-mile square district that is solely under the control of Congress? It's Washington, D.C., and it's not square anymore. It's not 10 miles on the side. The Virginia was given back its portion basically in the 1840s, but Maryland's section remains the District of Columbia or Washington, D.C. Okay. Now, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of the government of the United States and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. If you note there, it doesn't say national parks. It doesn't say parkland. It doesn't mention recreational areas. It says that the federal government is allowed to, with the permission of the legislature, they shall be for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. Other needful buildings. Well, there are any administrative buildings and that kind of thing. Nowhere is the Congress permitted to simply confiscate property under the order, either under a federal law or under the order of the President of the United States, except by permission of the state. There are many states in the West, in the far West. For instance, I think Nevada is 85% federal land. Normally that would be a no-no. They're just not allowed to just simply hold land. Now what they did was they forced, the federal government forced the states, in the enabling, what they call the enabling acts, when it before a state comes into the union, they had to pass this enabling act. And what they did was they forced them to put in their enabling act that the federal government could own huge swaths of land. It was, Utah, same way. Nevada's the worst. Other Western states were forced to concede their constitutional rights in order to come into the union. That's a no-no. That never should have been allowed, and yet here we are. That's nothing new. That being said, the reason I brought this up, presidents often, these elections changed hands. After 1912, suddenly Woodrow Wilson went progressive, and Of course, Taft and Roosevelt and Debs did not win. But in the next election, which was 1916, again, progressives, progressive versus progressive. And then in 1920, suddenly everybody was sick and tired of the progressives. They were sick and tired of World War One, and Woodrow Wilson's whole conversion to progressivism was repudiated. And who did they elect? Warren G. Harding. And Harding was very well, Harding and his vice president, Calvin Coolidge. And they were both very, very, very more like Cleveland Democrats than they were like the Taft Roosevelt wing of the Republican Party. And yes, there were wings back then too. There were conservative and radical wings. But this was a repudiation of the radicalism of Taft and Roosevelt. So when you hear people talking about Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt good, the good Roosevelt, no, he wasn't. He was just much, very much like his cousin, Franklin. So he was deeply progressive, and it's a mess. In any case, why did I bring all that up? Well, again, we're talking about making sausages, and I wanted to and making law and sausages, as we alluded to. There are some really weird attempts to do some things in this period between Donald Trump winning 322 electoral votes and being nominated for president. We're seeing all kinds of things, and it's very interesting to watch people go apoplectic over things like Donald Trump's appointments so far to the cabinet positions. For instance, some of the more progressive Republicans are just hating the fact that Matt Gaetz has been selected to be the Attorney General. That's not his only controversial appointment. I'll be quite honest. I see what Trump is doing here. Trump is essentially picking people who have experience in the fields that they have been appointed to. Now, the one I don't kind of get is Marco Rubio as Secretary of State, but I get Matt Gaetz as Attorney General. He is a bomb thrower, and if you ever watched him question, especially, for instance, the current Attorney General, Merrick Garland, who has grossly politicized that office, used it as a base for lawfare. If you haven't heard that term, it's an abuse of the law in order to take out political opponents. If you want to know what it is, it's what has been going on with Donald Trump since 2015, especially since after the 2020 election. The Department of, Attorney General's Office, Department of Justice, has been attempting that. I mean, Jack Smith's, who was the special prosecutor in the documents case, it became, and in the case, quote unquote, undermining election confidence and that kind of thing. The Department of Justice has been used as a headquarters. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, when they send people to Mar-a-Lago to retrieve documents that they didn't ask for back, they just simply went to retrieve them at gunpoint. When the FBI orders their agents to go in and shoot to kill if necessary to get those documents back, there's something wrong. Shoot to kill a former president or a member of his family or a member of his staff, there's something wrong. There's something very wrong. The department has been weaponized, and it was used. Now, for instance, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, is he a policy wonk? No, he's not. And that's who's been sitting in the Secretary of Defense seat. It's policy wonks. What do we get with policy wonks? We get wars we don't want. Now, not overall, but we don't get a bunch of peacemongers when we have policy wonks. We have people who are under the thumb of the CIA and the National Intelligence Agency and a lot of these other groups who are essentially working to gin up a war against Iran. They helped gin up the war against Iraq. They ginned up the war that we were involved in all through the Middle East. These were policy wonks who were involved. Pete Hegseth is not a policy wonk. He is a former officer in the Army National Guard. He did tours in Afghanistan and Iraq, and he earned 2 Bronze Stars. He's a co-host on Fox and Friends Weekend. Now, he's got journalism experience. He knows how to talk to journalists. This is not a bad thing. Trump has pledged to fire generals involved in the 2021 Afghanistan withdrawal. Why? Why would he do that? Because that withdrawal was beyond incompetence. We left billions of dollars worth of equipment there for the use of the Taliban. We had people killed because it was so ineptly done, so badly done. Trump is tired of the woke initiatives. They're more worried about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion than they are about the ability to win a war, than the ability to defend the United States. It's more important that we have DEI than we have well-trained troops who are qualified to do the jobs that they're asked to do. This is why a Pete Hegseth, who understands what it means to fight in war, very often these guys who were Secretary of Defense, again, policy wonks, desk warriors. And there are a whole lot of desk warriors in the Pentagon who are in high, high places who have no business being there. They're not combat people. They don't understand what readiness means. They're political appointees, and they've been politically promoted. And we saw, like, for instance, before Trump left office in 2021, he fired this Colonel Vindman, who had was clearly a radical. In fact, is a Ukrainian. He's an American citizen, but he was born in Ukraine and raised in Ukraine. And he has some very, socialistic ideas. And he was bringing them he's very liberal. And Trump fired him, cashiered him from the army for insubordination, I believe. And what happened? Biden brought him back and reappointed him. So I'm happy Pete Hegseth is going to come in. Do liberals like it? No, they don't. Now, I'm not sure what the deal is with Kristi Noem. Kristi Noem is a good conservative. She is appointed to Homeland Security, which means she would be involved in cracking down on immigration. Can she get the job done? I don't know. I don't know that much about her record. She is a South Dakota governor. Has been since 2019. She doesn't take much nonsense. She's got some issues. She's got some baggage. She was in consideration for Trump's running mate, but was dropped. Now get this, because this is the dumbest reason. She was dropped because she admitted in a book that she had killed her a hunting dog 20 years ago. Well, the reason she killed the hunting dog was because it was old, and she put it out of its misery, essentially. That's not allowed. You're supposed to let third parties put your dog down. The last time I had a dog, that died in June. I should have put him down. I went and bought some shells, and I just could not bring myself to shoot him in the back of the head. And fortunately, that meant that, and it was a weekend, and so I couldn't get him to a vet, and it meant that the poor dog suffered. We didn't even know he was sick until all of a sudden Friday night, he got very, very sick and then stopped eating and stopped drinking. And, died on Sunday night or early Monday morning. And I should have taken him out, but I didn't. So why is this a thing all of a sudden that she lost the vice presidency, the potential vice president slot, because she killed a dog 20 years ago? It's dumb. She wasn't joy shooting this dog. But that's what happens, folks, when, and again, law and sausages. Doug Burgum, Interior Secretary. Okay, that's, you know, North Dakota. He's the governor of North Dakota. He ran for president against Trump. And, of course, nobody had ever heard of him, and nobody voted for him. North Dakota and South Dakota are not well-known. Kristi Noem is well-known simply because, she's vocal, and she's very good at what she does. She's also extremely physically attractive. That's always a plus to getting some, you know, she's photogenic. Doug Burgum, he ran against Trump and shown Trump doesn't have any hard feelings. He was also among the finalists to serve as running mate, before he picked J.D. Vance. He has ties to the oil and gas industry and is expected to play a central role in Trump's push to increase oil drilling and energy production. Folks, this is why all of a sudden, when Joe Biden took office, the price of gasoline and diesel fuel skyrocketed. And it got up to for gasoline, I know, in our area, it got up over $4 a gallon. Why? Because drilling was shut down, pipelines were shut down, fracking was shut down, and then this last election we had Kamala Harris boo-hooing about how, well, I'm not really anti-fracking, except she was anti-fracking. She was anti-fracking before she wasn't anti-fracking before she was anti-fracking again. So one of the reasons that she lost, she tried to play the game with what I believe, what I don't believe. It was sort of a Daisy approach, if you will. He loves me, he loves me not. He loves me, he loves me not. Well, I like it, I like it not. I like it, I like it not. I like it, I like it not. She would play the game. She would be different things for different audiences. If you'll notice, she would change her accent when she spoke to specific audiences. That being here or there, Doug Burgum, probably since he has some, North Dakota has a lot of federal land and a lot of fracking and a lot of pipelining and a lot of that kind of stuff. He's probably a good choice. I don't know if he's a great choice. I don't know. He's probably a good choice. Tulsi Gabbard as the Director of National Intelligence. Let me tell you something. Tulsi Gabbard has been abused. Absolutely abused. Now, she is a Democrat who came over to the Republican side. It's not really that shocking. She was a moderate Democrat. And she ran for president in both 2020 and 2024. And the party absolutely abused her, the Democratic Party. I mean, she maintained her membership there until it became obvious that there was never ever going to be a reconciliation with the current people who were running the Democratic Party, because it's the radicals, it's the far left, the Gavin Newsoms, the Hillary Clintons, the Kamala Harris, Chuck Schumer, that wing of the party, Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, the whole squad, that's who has control of the Democratic Party, and that is why Tulsi Gabbard came over to the Republicans, and she has a very good relationship with Donald Trump, and she understands the intelligence community. She is a former military member. I think she may still be in the reserves. I'm not sure about that. From Hawaii. What's interesting about that National Guard veteran who served two tours of duty in the Middle East and long been critical of the Democratic establishment. She's on Trump's transition team. She's also, it's interesting to know that in Hawaii, which is a very liberal state, and she's a moderate. She was elected handily, regularly there, as a U.S. member of the U.S. House of Representatives, and her parents are MAGA. From what I understand, her parents have been MAGA all along, 2016 and 2020. So, CIA director or John Ratliff, he basically, he was head of national intelligence in the last Trump administration and selected to lead the CIA. He served as a congressman from Texas, a warrior for truth and honesty, according to Trump and the American public. He needs to really clean. The CIA is as corrupt as it can be. I mean, it is corrupt. They are dangerously corrupt. The whole national intelligence setup is completely corrupt. And Tulsi Gabbard and John Ratliff should work together to simply clean out, along with Matt Gaetz, to clean out the intelligence and the Justice Department. Especially the FBI needs to have huge numbers of people broomed out. There are some, the whole United Nations ambassador is Elise Stefanik. I don't care who's UN ambassador. It's a do nothing, basically let's kill America, group. I remember former UN ambassadors who basically went in and embarrassed the UN, which is what we need to have. Ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, that I don't get, except that he's a Christian and, he wants to see if he can make inroads into end that horrific stuff going on between Israel and Hamas. Ladies and gentlemen, it's awful. That whole war is awful, and it's awful. The Israelis did not start it, although they aren't completely innocent in the thing, but they did not start that. Innocent Israelis were murdered. Unarmed people were murdered. And, the Hamas is boo-hooing because their leadership is being wiped out, by surgical strikes. Well, boo-hoo. And they also have a proclivity to put their headquarters and their planning offices underneath hospitals and schools and that kind of thing. So that when the Israelis hit it, they get blamed for, targeting schools and hospitals and those kinds of things. That needs to come to an end. Can Mike Huckabee do it? I don't know. We do have a border czar. It's not Kamala Harris, even though she was it before she wasn't it, before she really was it. Again, this is one of the reasons she lost. The White House chief of staff appears to be a kick behind, take names later kind of person. So that's good. Some of these other people I don't know. It's interesting that Elon Musk, I love it that he's been put in, he and Vivek Ramaswamy, who's an Ohio guy, he's from New Albany, he lives in New Albany, he and Elon Musk have been appointed to the Department of Government Efficiency, and Lord, if we don't need that, I don't know what we need. We definitely need that. So, look, Musk is a genius. Ramaswamy is a genius. These guys know how things work, how they're supposed to work, and how to make them work. All you got to do is look what Musk has done with SpaceX over that Boeing project. Oh my gosh, what a bureaucratic and nightmare. You strand astronauts at the space station because your equipment can't do the job. But that being said, that is essentially, will things get more efficient? We can only hope. We can only pray to God, and we should be in prayer for all these people all the time. With that being said, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. Get a hold of me at chairman@principledpolicy.com. That's chairman@principledpolicy.com. And join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.